I like the mantra Ram very much, with a long A, and just to collect our minds, our thoughts, our everything, so that whatever words we will hear that are relevant for us, that they will fall on fertile ground. I will say one time alone, and then we will say three times together. There's a wonderful sacred place in Vrindavan called Nandagram. We are on the top of a picturesque hill. We find an ancient mandir or temple. And before we enter this temple, we sit near the steps of the that lead into the entrance, and then we chant this mantra Ram, and then also when we come out of the temple to complete, so to say, our experience, we leave the main door, we exit, and again we sit at the steps and again chant Ram. So it is a very nice mantra that ushers us over the threshold. Spiritual life, genuine spiritual life, always means that we cross a threshold that is there between the material and the spiritual consciousness. Just yesterday evening I was in a castle. Radhikaranjan will remember this castle, the Dharma castle, and we had a full house or a full castle of people who had come to my presentation, Tirtha, crossing the threshold. And there we talked about that, yes, for any spiritual experience to take part, we leave material consciousness and we enter an awareness of the spiritual, the spirit. Yes, and then when we return back from our experience, from our kirtan, from our meditation, we bring, if you so want, our treasures that we have gained with us. Today, I want to address you on the subject matter, how to obtain taste in chanting the holy names. If we wish to have a genuine experience that nourishes us in chanting, we need to bring together at the proper places our body, our mind, and our heart. These are the three human endowments, the gifts which we all have as human beings. A body through which we can perceive the world, through which we can express, through our singing, our language, something. A mind to process the informations, and a heart in which this most important and often so much rejected aspect of human life is, our feelings. So bringing them properly together in a spiritual process or spiritual sadhana, like chanting, can bring extraordinary results. Let me please alert you to the truth of, in Sanskrit it's called yojana, or alignment. Let us take something like health, something that we certainly all need and desire, especially when we are missing health. And then this is the main talking point and thinking point of our lives. How can I get healthy? Now, according to the ancient science of health, Ayurveda, there need to be three things that you need to bring together to become healthy. And this is something very necessary to understand if you want to go into the science of chanting the holy names. Because also there in the chanting we need to bring three things together. Let us start with Ayurveda and what we can bring must bring together to become healthy. First, you must have a proper diet. That what you put into your mouth, the water which you drink, the food which you eat, is really building up the constituents of your health. You do need to watch this very carefully, because the food and the drink transforms into your organism and makes it either healthy or burdens it with unnecessary toxins that are coming when you have the wrong food and the wrong, and you can't digest it properly. Diet is the first pillar of health. The next is proper sleep. That means you need to enter in your sleep a deep and dreamless state, and that usually comes when you have proper life rhythms and life circles and also sleep circles. I know that this is a problem for many people because they are so overactive and they are so much filled with impressions in their minds that it's difficult for them to find rest and respite. But that's the second pillar of health, proper sleep. Proper sleep means the sleep where you can go deep into the deep and dreamless state. The third pillar of good health is quite broad, quite expensive. It is lifestyle. The first principle in lifestyle is movement or exercise. You need to move your body. It is a moving vehicle. It is meant for locomotion. You have legs that are meant to move forward. You have arms that do things. You are a moving being. So proper lifestyle means also proper movement and especially exercise. I think many of you are aware of it because you have some contact with the science and the teachings of yoga and so on. Proper lifestyle means also to have proper sangha, association that uplifts and not pulls you down or whatever. Other harmful things can happen. A movement or exercise, company, places you go, places you avoid. All this lifestyle is a huge subject, as you know. So here we have three pillars of health. Now the interesting thing is that it is the combination or the working together of these factors. If you would only eat for health and not sleep and not have exercise, that eating, although it may be the most healthy things in the world, will not be sufficient. If you only sleep and not eat and not have a good lifestyle, it also doesn't work. And similarly, the same holds true for the lifestyle. So the proper bringing this together makes this miraculous effect of a health. It's a miraculous effect that happens. This is very important that you understand. It's not just one. It's the combination and working together of three that brings the desired result. So let us take this wisdom of alignment, bringing it together, setting things properly up, to our main subject here, the chanting of the holy names, either in japa or kirtan. For it to become a very, let us say, nourishing, healthy practice, you need to bring the body in place, and I will talk about this, and we will discuss what this means. You will need to focus your mind, and you need to involve and engage your heart. Let us then only, when you bring this together, then the deep taste can happen. I must tell you confidentially that today, this is my second day in my home base after 2.5 months traveling and being very busy. I needed to apply the science of alignment, because I was all over the place with my attention, and I need to do this, and I need to write an endorsement for 2 books, and at 3 o'clock there is a big lecture in Berlin, and and then the book, my own book, I'm planning the next year, which will take a lot of time, because we will have to prioritize some of the invitations. We can't do everything, so we must, and so on and so forth. I was a little bit all over the place, but I knowing that today I would talk about how to obtain taste in chanting and go deep, and I applied the science, which I will now share with you. It's an ancient science. And I could touch that place inside where I felt actually very connected with that eternal spiritual dimension. I could cross the threshold from the material to the spiritual reality. So here it is, what you could do. If you want to take notes, this is now a good time to take notes, because what you will hear is extremely practical. It is not theoretically at all, and it can be applied by everyone of us to maximum benefit. Fine, let's start with the body. There's a secret about our physical embodiment, and that is the secret of posture. When you have an attentive listening posture or chanting posture, you will find that inside of you confidence comes up, your energy is flowing in the right direction, and you will become very, very soon a mixture of alertness will be there, awareness, and just a great happiness. I would like to tell you that there was once a sadhu, a saint, to whom a very unhappy person came, and he tried to help him. As the man spoke to him about his various problems, the sadhu noted that this man was slumped over. His head was like this, the shoulders were forward, his back was arched. He was really, you say in Germany, a heap of misery. The sadhu said to the man, "Oh, please come back tomorrow. Then today I'm not in the position to help you, but come back tomorrow." So when this sad man visited the sadhu was also having such a miserable posture. But as the man entered into his dwelling, his hut, the sadhu screamed out, "It works! It works! Now where I sit like you, I feel also miserable, like anything." A posture really influences, here comes a difficult word, our state, that is, how we are. Therefore it is known, a confident posture, erect, brings a confident mind. It is really that simple. And there are postures in the world, I once heard about it, which are confident postures. There's also posture in yoga. It is the Virasana, where you stand like a hero. And then obtain the mindset of a hero, that yes, we can overcome all the obstacles and we can be successful in whatever it is that we are doing. Virasana, those of you who know yoga know this. In chanting, we aim at an upright physical posture. Let us say we sit down. You can do this now. Then we roll back our shoulders, see, like this. We bring our shoulders to our ears and then bring them back, our shoulder blades. And this opens our chest, no? So that we can breathe properly and fully. The posture which we are trying to attain is that our spine is upright. Those who are really into detail, they like to bring their head a little bit back. I can show you here, like this, not like this, no? Like this. Chin is almost touching the neck. This is one of the three elements of proper, what you do with the body. The second thing you do with the body is pronunciation, good pronunciation. You try to make, have the mantra really there. You articulate it, you formulate it. It starts with the breathing, that you have good breathing. Then it goes to the vocal cord. And then the tongue and the lips are involved. And you clearly articulate. Let us do this, please, all together. Sit straight. Mm-hmm. Align your shoulders, please. Roll them back. Fantastic. Do a few deep inhalations and exhalations. And then let us articulate the mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Please join me. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Once again, an entire mantra, all of us together, please. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Wonderful. And the last thing which we do when we align our body is we listen attentively, we receive the sound in our ears. So when you do this, these three things, you will see a lot of your attention that may be spread out over so many objects begins to align and come together. Please let us now do this all together. Posture, I'm repeating myself because this is a little like a workshop. You remember opening the chest and sitting straight, aligning your head also. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And then we will see that we pronounce the mantra properly, and then listen. Let us take a few deep breaths. And please start now. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Listen. Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Wonderful! And of course, when you sing, the same holds true. Bring these three things together and you have started to work on the first level, that is the physical level. Posture, pronunciation and listening. Now this is very much beginner's knowledge. We need to go two steps further. Let us now enter the second level, the level of the mind. My dear everyone, the mind is very, very active. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is asked by Arjuna, how can I ever hope to control this restless mind? It seems the mind is as restless as the raging wind. It moves. Have you ever tried to stop the wind by holding it? Wait. My garden is just has so such new plants. Don't come here. It won't stop. So the mind doesn't stop so easily for anyone or anything if it is not consciously addressed and consciously treated. For the mind to come into an attentive position, you need to first relinquish the thoughts of the past and the future. That's where the material mind is mostly active. This happened, this was said, this was written on my WhatsApp, like this. In the future I will do such and such. It's very difficult for the mind to be in the present moment, in the in the now. No, the mind is not comfortable to be in the now and free from thoughts of the past and plans of the future. It is at first an activity which is called manasangharanam in Sanskrit. You need to collect the mind, bring it to the present moment. I always compare this for me. If I want to go on a journey, I need to bring my shirts, my the things I need for my hygiene, the socks. I need to collect them from everywhere in the house and bring them together in one place, this suitcase. Then I can go on a travel, on a journey, and I have everything. So when I want to go to the into the journey of kirtan, of japa, I need to bring my mind together. I need to collect it from wherever it has gone to. All the projects, all the plans, all the worries, all the anxieties, all the everything, and bring them together in one place on the mantra. And then the mantra will act and I will have a wonderful journey. So the first thing is be fully present in the present moment. In all spiritual traditions, this is achieved by the simple technique of focusing the mind on the breath, or in our kirtan tradition, you focus the mind on a mantra. In this way, you collect it, you bring it to this one place, either the breath or the mantra. And if you can do this, you will see that when you sing, breath and mantra, they combine. After some time, you find your rhythm of breathing and chanting the mantra almost in an automatic way. It just happens. It just happens. Also, when you chant on japa, breath and the mantra come together. Good. Bring it away from from the many things. There was a very nice comment just now. It disappeared. Can you put it again? Mana samharana means, there was just a moment ago someone of you. Yes, here it is. Mana samharana means to repeatedly bring the mind back when it wanders to the mantra or our to the mantra. We are speaking of kirtan. Yes, fine. I see now someone, Gokrishna, my assistant, has put something next to me so that I can see it there. It's the chat box, I think it's called. So practically this means you have to retrieve your mantra, you have to take your mantra from the thoughts of the past, and you have to bring it also away from the thoughts of the future, because that's exactly where the mind will always go, the uncontrolled mind. And you just bring it to the present moment. The way you do this is very simple. As you chant, you give your entire awareness to the mantra and rest your mind on it. The Chandogya Upanishad gives a very graphic image, the image of a bird, a falcon, who is bound to a perch, a stick or something. So in the very beginning, The falcon flies and flutters and so on, but because it's bound, it cannot move very far. So it's somewhat awkward. It flutters around and so on. Then it realizes, wait a minute, in this situation I can find peace when I sit on the very perch to which I'm bound. And then it usually sits there peacefully waiting for its master to come and perhaps feed it or take the falcon with him for hunting or whatever purposes he is engaged in. So this, my dear everyone, is the science of Manasamharana, bringing the mind back from its many subjects repeatedly and letting it land on the mantra. First it will try to flutter here and there and not be connected with the mantra, but then if you bring the mind to the mantra and keep it there long enough, it will become very peaceful and very much restored to its original sattvic or virtuous nature. It's lucid, clear nature, when the mind can rest on the mantra. Just sit there like the falcon and be happy there. What also is there, it is very much related to mana. It's really one practice. When you see that your attention wanders, as it will, you just repeatedly bring it back. I have a very good friend, and he used to have a dog. I don't know how we called him. I think we called him Waldi, like Vivaldi, you know, the Italian composer. And when we would do our philosophical walks and talks, we had this practice to walk and talk, Waldi came along. And sometimes Waldi saw a deer or a rabbit, and then he became so enthusiastic, he chased after them. He never was biting any rabbit or deer, but he was always running and chasing after them. So our mind also sees often like Waldi some objects in the distance, in the past and in the future, and then starts chasing after it. And we have to bring him back. We're like, when Waldi, we called Waldi, and then my friend understood, well, this is an area where there are a lot of rabbits. So he put Waldi on a long a leash. So you have to put your mind sometimes also on a leash, which ends at the mantra. Krishna addresses this question of mind control in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, yata yata nishalati manas chanchalam astiram tato natatas tato niyam yaitat atmyaneva vasham nayat. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering nature and also unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it. Not withdraw means samharanam. It and bring it back under the control of the self. This is something that you have to do on an ongoing basis. No? You don't do it one time, you don't do it twice, until the mind is finally pure enough that it stays in one place. And then you will obtain something which is really wonderful and chanting. You will have a type of samadhi, that is a full absorption where you don't really perceive any longer the many distractions that your mind, that the world puts in front of you. This is a gift of the chanting of the holy name. It will become so good. And I guess some of you have this again, that the mind stays always with the mantra, even in your sleep. I know in my own life, I have many times experienced the most blissful nights I can imagine. That is, my mind was singing, and I woke up with a song, and I stepped out of the bed with a dance step, you know, because the mind was vibrating, echoing with the sound of the holy name. This comes by practice, really. So, okay, we have aligned the body. We are aligning the mind by relinquishing thoughts of the past and future and focusing it on the mantra, and also by just collecting the mind, bringing it back to the sound of the holy name. I would like now to go to our third human endowment, that is to engage the heart, that means our feeling self, in the chanting of the holy name. Let me first of all say, I think many people today suffer from having lost their heart. There are three hearts altogether in our human existence. One is the pump, who I think pumps, I don't know, thousands of, and tens of thousands of liters of blood through the body during one day. Then there is the second heart, that is the heart is the seat of emotions. I always joke when an Italian person says "amore," I love, then he will hold his hand to his heart. He will not hold his hand to his head unless there's a special situation. I love, you know, we will put our hands to our heart, knowing very well, intuitively or by our reason, that it is here where the seat of our emotions, our feelings are. This is the second heart. But there's one more heart which sadly many of us have lost. It is the spiritual heart. The heart in which the true self resides, and in which the supreme, as the super soul who accompanies us, resides. The Upanishad speak of this heart in terms of a tree. There's a tree of the body, and inside the tree of the body there is the crown, and again inside the crown there is a nest, a big nest, where two birds reside. This nest is the heart, and in the nest of the heart, so to say, is the the individual who needs to find his or her authentic path, and the supreme divine Lord, the presence is there. So this is the spiritual heart, my dear everyone, and so many have lost it. Just yesterday I read, before I went to bed, my favorite German fairy tale. It's about one person, Peter Munk is his name, who wanted to become rich and famous. And there were two spirits in the forest, one good, who would not tell him do everything to become rich and famous. He would warn him, this is a dangerous path to take if you give up your own self. And then there was a bad spirit. His name was Holländer Michel. These are all German names, you will forget them. That's not also not so important. And he was willing to make Peter Munk rich and famous, provided Peter Munk would give him his heart. Peter was really, wow, how can I exist without a heart, you know? But Holländer Michel said, I will give you a better heart than your human heart. I will give you a heart of marble that will be cold, and you will never be hurt again by others because you have a cold heart. You will never ever regret anything you do because you have a marble heart. You will actually be able to go to do what is necessary to become rich and famous. You will selfishly pursue all your goals. Just say yes. So Peter Munk went to Holländer Michel's house, and Holländer Michel showed him a room with beating human hearts. These are the hearts of the people who agreed to my proposal, he said, and whom I have given marble hearts, cold hearts instead. And Peter knew many of these people, not all of them. They all had become rich and famous. They all were blessed with material success. So he then agreed to it, Holländer Michel, just for a moment, was putting his hand on Peter's head, and for a moment he dozed away. He went away with his attention. He was just almost asleep, and when he woke up, Holländer Michel said, "Our operation is successful." And Peter grabbed his heart. It was not beating, but everything felt very good. And he went into his life. It's a long story. He was very bad to the person who loved him most, who had supported him. It was a lady, and he became very, very successful and rich, and he didn't feel any regret. He didn't feel any, you know, that bite of the conscience, which is sometimes there when we do something wrong. He didn't feel all that. He had traded his heart. I think we all have been in a similar situation. This is a fairy tale and it exaggerates things. But also we have been touched by Maya, the illusory energy. We've fallen asleep. And when we woke up, we had lost our spiritual heart, where there is the Supreme Lord there, and where we, as our true selves, are there. And we navigate now through this world with our marble hearts, but unfortunately, my dear everyone, you can't erase the spirit. This is different from this fairy tale. Here the hearts could be traded, but you can never give away or trade away your spiritual identity, and when you don't care for it enough, it comes to the surface of your awareness, and you will feel something is missing, something is not there at all. So recovering our spiritual heart, that is a main project really in Kirtan. Perhaps you have said Kirtan seen Kirtan leaders who have said, now please chant from your heart. No, I've seen Radhika Ranjan doing this, I've seen Madhava do this. I also sometimes remind those who participate in a kirtan to please now access some devotional feelings that you can feel in relationship to the Lord in the heart. It's so easy. You just need to turn around, and bring your attention to Krishna, which you can do either by looking at a nice picture, or even better, by looking at a wonderful memory of where you felt close to the Lord. You have to adjust your heart a little bit, because it's never lost. You just have to turn away from your material desires, your material consciousness, your material awareness, the various stories in which you live, the narratives, and take down your social mask and see who you are when your roles, your masks are no longer there, and just call out to Krishna. In Kirtan we see this often when individuals or individual participants chant, and they all of a sudden seem in their consciousness to move away from the material plane and to go above the clouds. That's how my spiritual master Srila Prabhupada called this state. And they feel the vastness, and they see the sun, and they never want to come back from and go underneath the blanket of forgetfulness. They don't want to go under the clouds again, and therefore they do kirtan as much as possible throughout the day. Yes, this is the devotional heart. Let me see. There is a wonderful prayer which I introduced on the retreat which we just had in England. It says, it acknowledges that at the moment my heart is still divided. I feel attraction to material things, but I'm sincerely, I sincerely want that I feel attraction for the spirit. And a person who feels like this, he prays, just as young men desire young ladies, and young ladies desire young men, my dear Lord, may my mind be attracted to you in the same natural way. Oh, do you all know this? There may be someone entering the kirtan hall, and your mind feels, oh, what an interesting person. No? So it's spontaneously drawn there. You don't have to educate the mind in this. Or another example could be food. You see some very tasty food that captures your fancy, and immediately, without having to do anything, the mind is spontaneously attracted. This is called raga. Raga is a spontaneous attraction that is not forced at all. That it seems it's already in us, and it just comes out when it's given the circumstances in which it can manifest or come to the foreground. So this same spontaneous attraction we wish to unearth. I hope you understand this English word, and I didn't make it up. Unearth, you dig it up, you bring it out, like an archaeologist brings out an archaeological architect, no? And you bring that and you direct it to... you don't even need to direct it. It comes directly to the Lord. So recovering your lost heart, there are three things which you can do. Now please full attention again. First of all, become aware of your need, that you need, have a spiritual need, that you are a spiritual being in this material body who has a spiritual need. My spiritual master called it the Govinda necessity, the necessity for Govinda, for Krishna. The second is revive your heart by reaching out in your kirtan. This means you have to bring some consciousness to your singing. Don't just sing a nice melody, but reach out to the divine, to the supreme. I need you, I want you, I crave for your shelter. No? And at times when you feel dry and nothing works, beg for mercy, specifically for shelter. Namashraya, this is called. Ashraya means refuge, shelter, and you can pray for that. That is these three things, my dear devotees, my dear everyone who's there. I feel you are very somehow I feel I talk very freely, like someone who himself goes on the path of bhakti. They will help you, but it may take a little time. Just like to become healthy requires the alignment of three things, to have deep abiding taste and chanting also requires to do these, to do three things. In healthcare, it's clear you need to eat the right things, you need to perhaps avoid all those yummy chocolate sweet things that just create a lot of stress for your digestion system. And you have to take good healthy food. Then you need to sometimes go to bed at the proper time so that you find deep, restful sleep. And you need to adjust your lifestyle a little bit, especially in regards to your movement. And then after some time, it may take a little time, you feel very healthy and very good. In the same way with chanting. You need to adjust your physical posture, your pronunciation, your listening. Then you need to bring your mind away from the many distracting things and focus it on the mantra. And then with your heart, you need to turn to the divine, to the supreme. However you understand him, really, this is so universal. It is so absolutely free from the dogma of religious. How do you call this? You know, the empty words of religious dogma. No, it's very, very universal and very true. Good. I have now reached the end of the first part of our presentation. Let me pause for now and see with Radhika Ranjan, who's here with us, I wanted to now do a little kirtan where I guide the audience in, through all the three steps so that they have this experience, and then asked for question and answers, but I could also shift it around and asked for question and answers now. What do you think? You're working with this group since quite some time, so you have...
I think your intuition is right. I think kirtan good. Guiding us through this would be wonderful, and Q&A afterwards.
Fine. Good. So everyone, we will now go from hearing about this into a very practical application. My hope in doing this is that you will feel the miraculous effects of these simple practices, and then you will bring them in your kirtan or japa so that you have maximum taste and effect. That is why we do this. So in order to do this, I really need your full cooperation. I'm aware that Zoom classes are not perhaps as effective as in present teaching, you know, like if we would all sit together. But I think you can, if you go with the right intention into this and say, okay, I'm giving my best as much as I would do when I would be in a physical in-presence workshop. Yeah? Good. So let me just quickly see all of you. I see from left to right, Radhika, Ranjan, you are two times there. And, then I see Rachel Mason. Hello, Rachel. I believe we have seen each other perhaps just a few days ago in the concert in Covent House. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can ask Gokrishna, my assistant, so that I can see the other, because this will be a little personal. I want to see you as when we do this exercise, as when I have you there. So there is Pip Francis. What a beautiful name you have. then there's the Kirtan Training in Person cohort. Oh, you are many. That is very nice to see you. I can recognize a few faces. Hare Krishna. I see him, the bass player who helped so nicely in Studio 108. Yes, and I can see a few. Yes, that one who was rising there. And then I see Stefan Winkel. Sprichst du Deutsch, Stefan? Nein, okay. your name sounds so absolutely German. then I see, I don't see her, but I see the name, Daniela. Wonderful. So, very good. So, I know a little bit who is there. And now let us see with the sound if it is good enough. We will just do a little microphone thing. During the COVID time, that is all what I did. Always with the on Zoom and my heart craves to see you, but it's all the best we can do. So Radhika Ranjan, may I just ask you if you can if the sound is all right. This is just sound check, no? We are getting wonderful. Ready.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Now with the melody. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This was just the sound check. Maybe a little deeper we should go. Good. So the sound is okay?
It's wonderful. If Guru Krishna can play a little louder, that would be even better. But yeah. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He heard you. Fine, my dear everyone. Let us now have a wonderful experience of the three aligning the three elements. I request you to sit straight. To bring your shoulders up. I think you know how to do it. And, that's just alone. It's just so good. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namine. These are mantras by which the kirtan singer and those who know them connect with the line of teachers so that there will be the electrical current of blessing. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Askatya de satarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Gadadha Srivasadiyo Bhaktavinda. Kindly maintain your attentive posture. Take care that your pronunciation of the mantra is fully intact. And see that while you chant, you're listening or hearing your own chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Hare Hare. Namo Hari Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Continue with the kirtan. Please now make sure that after your body is fully aligned, you bring your mind. Remember the falcon, that bird who was fluttering around until it settled on the perch and found peace. Please also bring your mind now to the mantra, each mantra, and continue to listen and pronounce. Start now. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Krishna,
Krishna Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare together, please. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And the last thing, as Guru Krishna continues to play, is perhaps the most important. See, in kirtan we can have the best melodies, the best rhythm, but if the spiritual heart is not there, and only our marble heart, our gold heart, is present, the feeling is not there, the ecstasy is not there. As they say in Sanskrit, the bhava is missing, the life of the kirtan, the spiritual life of the kirtan is yet to come. So I request you to now close your eyes, if you have not done so already, bringing your attention to the heart space. That's easy if you imagine you breathe into the heart space. Follow your breath as it goes down and reaches the area of the heart. And there, please turn sincerely to the Supreme who has been with you all the time and who may have brought you to kirtan just so that you can discover him again. And as you sing the next few mantras, let these mantras be an expression. Let the singing be a sincere gesture, a request, a call for that eternal divine connection. And please try to sing in that mood which could be described as a prayerful mood.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hey. Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare.
Bring all these three together, body, by aiming again at a attentive, alert, listening position. The mind, by repeatedly, again and again, bringing it back to just the sound of the mantra, just that. And the heart, that devotional, spiritual heart, by expressing something in a serious or sincere is the word, mode. And if this is too complicated, just go from time to time through this, let us say, kirtan checklist. Is my body aligned? Is my mind aligned? Is my heart aligned? And practice. Please practice. Don't be lazy to this practice. It will be very good for you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As we exit the hall of Kirtan, we will again chant three times the mantra Ram. Everyone, please, three times. Inhale. Hare Krishna. It has something, no? It has something divine. A taste of the eternal. Good. So I will now see that we spend the remainder of our time together in a lively question and answer session. I do recognize that when we have gone deep into a kirtan experience where we have aligned the body, the mind, and then the heart, that we are so peaceful that our rational mind, who seems to be expert in going around and around and around, it is peaceful, and at the moment there is no question. But perhaps there are questions which you had earlier. Now, if you go in your mind as I, and in your mind to the times when you chant or chanted, perhaps there were questions just in relation to anything. I would, of course, appreciate if we start with questions relating our subject, how to chant with taste. The answer was align these three elements. Then you have Naam Ruchi. The Sanskrit word is Naam Ruchi, a deep abiding taste. Good. Let us now see. I put my spectacles on to see you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, we have a question from our wonderful Veda here. She's with us in person. I'll just pass it forward. Yes.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Veda. I would love to see you, but my Gokrishna, can you please? I can only see three people here, or three windows here. I want to see the person who asked the question. Here, I see you now. Yes, Veda. Yes, I see you. Very good. Please ask your question, Veda.
Fantastic. So you were talking about how to recover the lost heart, and you gave us two of the three, and I wanted to know what the third was. So the first was become aware that you are a spiritual being with a spiritual need. The second was to revive your heart by reaching out in your kirtan, so that you're reaching out to the Supreme. I crave for your shelter, yeah. Maharaj, like I beg for your mercy and ashram, right? And what was the third one?
Yeah. You have it almost right. The second one was reviving the spiritual heart by reaching out to Krishna in our chanting. That's the first connection which you make. And then the third one is you request for shelter, for service, and ultimately for mercy, no? You request for shelter, then service, then ultimately mercy. Yeah. Like I'm trying, because Veda, you will see, in anything which we do, especially in spiritual efforts or spiritual practice, we come to a point where we have really given our best. But notice that still something is missing. At that time, this third dimension comes into play. No, I have not yet found the connection. I've tried to make it, but now you beg for shelter, for service, and for mercy. You really, a spiritual life starts really, is a combination, this is better. Spiritual life is a combination of your own effort, where you really give your best. It doesn't matter what is your best. Maybe your best is not so mountain-like high as the best of, let us say, a a very accomplished kirtan leader who's on a high spiritual level. But whatever it is, when you give your best, that is enough, but not enough to reach the divinity. Even if you can give a mountain of your best and you are the most accomplished, very good that you have given what you have, but it's never enough to reach that place where words cannot go and where the mind cannot go and where certainly our efforts cannot go. So this asking for shelter and kripa is the Sanskrit word, grace, divine grace, is always important. It's important for the highest devotees and the beginner. And in bhakti, listen to this, Veda, from the divine perspective, from the supreme perspective, there is not much difference between the accomplished devotee and the beginner. If they give their best. No? The problem with the beginner is he cannot so easily give his best because he's still so much... Yeah, I can only express it with my hands like this, you know. So, but anyone who gives his best, he is recognized, and then the hand of God, so to say, we want to express it in the way of our Western culture, it reaches down and pulls you. So therefore, one of my favorite senses is, never hesitate to go all the way and know that the Supreme is always beyond it. Thank you for your inquisitiveness. It is very, thank you. I feel so inspired here to talk about these more subtle points of bhakti. Good. Thank you, Veda. Anyone else?
Another question?
Yes. Another question.
When you are in the three hearts, firstly, I wanted to know, where does that reference come from? Because people talk a lot about, there's a number of books that talk about the feeling heart and the working heart, meaning the pump and what it physically does, and the emotionality of it. But there aren't many references, of course. In Hinduism, we'll find a number of these spiritual heart and the Upanishads reference that you gave about the two birds, the Ishwar and the Brahman and the Parabrahma, right? But in terms of the experience of the spiritual heart, when do you know the subtle regions have been activated?
Wow, very good, Veda. You are talking like a person who is informed. Yes. This point of the three hearts, I have only heard it once in relationship to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's a practical guide book on doing bhakti, which was composed by Rupa Goswami in the 15th century. There he speaks about the three levels in which bhakti is done, with the body with one's focus, and then finally from the soul level. But it is something that is, let us say, that is not so often assembled in one place, but it's in various places. We all hear about the body and the organs of the body in all types of wisdom scriptures, and we all hear about the mind, the world of feelings, the feeling heart, that is the emotions, that is not felt so much in the brain. The mind and the heart are very related, but there is a more rational mind that we allocate at the brain, and the more feeling heart that we allocate in the pump, you know, in the area of the heart. It's a subtle thing. And we talk in language, in our common language, about this feeling heart. Oh, that pained my heart, you know. It was not a spear or dagger which went, but it were words that evoked some hurtful feelings, not the feeling heart. To take something to heart, give heartfelt congratulations, and so on. The feeling heart is a common thing, and the spiritual heart is an Upanishadic heart. But it's also in the Bhagavatam. It is said, listen to this, there is a city of nine gates that refers to the body, which has nine gates altogether: two eyes, two nostrils, two here, and under two lower gates. And it says, within the city of the nine gates, there's a very special house, which is the heart. And again, in that special place, the heart house, if you so want, there is a very special room in which the whole universe has place. This refers obviously to a spiritual place, you know. Small place in which the whole universe takes place, that's not a material place. So, yes, we find these descriptions all over the Shastras. And what is, I think, very important for a genuine spiritual practitioner, we find it in our experience also. This is a difference between a religious person who believes something, like there are many religious Hindus who believe something, but act still in a very human way. And there is a difference to the spiritual person who doesn't just believe it. He is interested in transforming his heart so that he can make an experience. That's a huge difference between religions and spiritual people. Religious people may not necessarily be spiritual, but a spiritual person also includes the religious person. But he has much more and often a different perspective on the same thing. I'm very delighted to meet someone who's thinking deeply, and I think it would be very good if you study the philosophy and the scriptures and get a comprehension, always with the eye to use the knowledge to make a spiritual experience. And then, you know, when you have wisdom and at the same time experience, two together, then you are, that's a very powerful package which will empower your life in many, many tremendous ways. Thank you. All the best. Do we have another person? Yes, Stefan Winkler. This is too, so much, Winkel. That is, I think you're almost love of our neighbors. They would have, yes, such names.
I'm from the Netherlands.
Netherlands, good. Yes. Yeah. Yes, please, Stefan.
I'm very grateful to be sharing this space with you and our fellow students, teachers, and those who make this possible. My question is about the taste in japa compared to in kirtan. Because when we sing in kirtan, we have these nice melodies and we sing together and we take the time to sing one repetition. We take longer time. And during japa, all these things are very different. We sit alone often. We have a number of rounds you want to chant, so we have less, we allocate ourselves less time, and all these melodies are often gone. And it's almost as if these circumstances make it harder to feel the taste, at least for me. So would you say that there is different recommendations or additional recommendations for doing japa? Or is it just like the test to really apply the teachings you've just given us?
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful. Again, such an insightful question. You mean, with insightful, I mean you have experienced in both japa and kirtan and described it from that experience perspective. Yes, these rules or recommendations hold true both for japa and kirtan. They are in relationship to becoming absorbed in the sacred names, in the divine names. And as we know, you can chant the divine names both in japa and kirtan. Yes, you are correct. Kirtan is much easier because of some of the elements which you have mentioned. There's also the group which sings, there are the instruments, there is much more involvement is there. You sing as opposed to softly whispering the mantra. And therefore, in this work, very wonderful work, Hari Bhakti Vilas, the great Acharya or spiritual teacher Sanatan Goswami says very clearly this: in order to have a successful japa practice, you need a somewhat purified mind, a mind that is not, has no longer these obstacles which we find. Whereas kirtan, not only do you not need a purified mind so that kirtan works, kirtan itself will purify the impure mind. Then why don't we just do kirtan and drop japa at least for now, as we are in the process of purifying our mind? See, in japa there is one very, very important aspect that you will not find in kirtan. You are absolute alone with Krishna. And in that time, a mirror is shown to you where you stand in your relationship to the divine. And sometimes it can be very embarrassing. You know, I'm guiding devotees in japa and kirtan. This is one of my services, and I often see that they have very difficult time with japa, kirtan is so much easier. And then they say, "Should we just drop japa?" I say, no, you have to. In the process of japa, you will learn to become serious and to go beyond your comfort zone also, you know, in order to make it work. And it's a little bit more austere of a practice, but it strengthens you like anything if you do it regularly and not give up in the face of the obstacles which are standing in front of you. Yes, but these are processes which work. I mean, some time ago, I sat down and wrote this book. It's called The Living Name, and it is a guidebook to chanting with absorption. And what I have presented to you today is the wisdom of the first chapter. There are altogether five chapters. In other words, there's much, much more to learn than what we have touched today on. I've also brought a few new things and different things, of course. Everything must be always fresh, I think. And therefore, I wanted to first see you and have a feel for this group before I started. Mm-hmm. And you could read many helpful suggestions. It's not at all a theoretical book, but a practical book with a lot of exercises also. Tell you do this and do that, and then there is a result. Japa, although I do this now since many years and I like it, those who live with me know that I'm so happy when I sit alone and do my japa, it still remains my most important project to improve that and to work with it, because good japa, as we heard earlier, is directly related with your whole character, your whole personality, your whole purity of mind. No, it is. And that's why I like it so much, because it's a wholesome practice. It's a universal practice. And yes, some of these higher truths, Stefan, they come not just when you sit leisurely in your couch, hear your favorite kirtan leader who makes your adrenaline level go high up, but I'm talking a little sarcastically. I know it's not like this, but you know it. And japa is, that's when you have to be serious to make it work. Good. Fine. Thank you. Thank you. Now let us see. We have 6 more minutes, I see, here on my clock.
There was a hand. I saw Saskia, I think, put her hand up.
Yeah, Saskia. Yes, I remember you. Saskia, could you do me a favor? Go a little bit closer to the microphone, because the sound is very all over the place. Yes?
Okay. I had a similar question, but now I think, okay, there's a third one. So that the reminding of the mantra. So often I go through the street or do my work, and I have this sound always vibrating in my mind, so the remembrance of a kirtan or a melody. And what is this? It's like a third, it's a kirtan, it's a japa, and there is this.
I can only congratulate you from my heart. This is one of the desired goal of those who chant either kirtan or japa. In relationship to japa, this is called ajapa japa. Ajapa, new word, japa. That is the repetition of the sacred names without a willful effort. It comes on its own. The same is with melodies that come of their own and accompany you. It means sometimes in the past you were so absorbed in kirtan or in japa that these holy names left such a deep impression in your subconscious mind that now it comes out. You have many such deep impressions, they are called sanskaras in Sanskrit, where all of a sudden a memory surfaces from your subconscious mind into your conscious awareness, this may be very, very happy events in your life. It could be also very traumatic effects. Traumatic things have a lot of power. They go very deep inside, and they come out in certain situations. Sometimes totally unrelated, bang, all of a sudden it's there like a bubble that comes from the ground of a pond, bloop, 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 to the surface of the pond, and bloop, there's a... this is very good. This is very good. At that time, you can do this Nam Smaranam. Let this the name rotate, in, not rotate, go on in your mind. And unfortunately, we have to interrupt. When you go on the street, then, oh, now I have to get into the... tram, and you might have to negotiate your way, because so many want to go in the tram, and then you may lose it for a while. But if you learn to keep this, you can even push your way in, especially in India. There's a pushing is a way to do things, and keep your attention on the mantra. This is ultimately what we want to come to, the continuous chanting of the holy name, which will go on even in dreams. And I will end by telling you, my spiritual teacher, he was on this tremendous level. I remember when he stayed with us in Germany, his sleeping room, or the room which we gave him where he took his rest, was next to a balcony. In other words, you could go from the sleeping room on a balcony. So I wanted to see how he sleeps, and I somehow got up through the lightning conductor, you know, the wire on the side of the house where the lightning goes down into the earth. So I climbed up, went onto the balcony, and looked through the window into his sleeping room. And he, while he was sleeping, there was the sound of the holy name coming. A person who has that divine exalted consciousness, he will not need to say anything. Everything vibrates, even the pores in his skin vibrate, and that is why we feel elated when we see such a person. Ooh, there's something special about him. The spirit is pervading his every cell of his being. Yes. Good, my dear everyone. It was a lovely session with all of you. I would like when there is an opportunity, when we are together in one place, that we see each other. In my clock, it's now that our time is up. Maybe Radhika Ranjan, you want to say a few concluding words, and then I think this is the end of the session. Or will you go on, and I just sign off? What is the situation?
There is still another day and a half for our concluding weekend of the Kirtan training. But Maharaj, thank you so much for your time, for your presence, for sharing your insights. And I really hope that all of us that were present here today can take the lessons that were given, and not just let it be a two-hour entertainment session, but something that we will really chew on and really meditate on. Perhaps it's something you want to highlight and say, come back to as soon as possible, these notes. And so, yes, thank you, Maharaj, for your time. Next time, we really want that he will be present with us in person for the next cohort. And so we'll try and see if we can make the dates aligned and make that happen. Also, our Prem Raj has got a little poem that he has tried to emulate Hirsch's poetry style and talent. And I think he's going to do if not better. So we would love to hear Prem Raj's summary of our time together with Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for your class. Yeah, we've tried to see if we can summarize some of the nectar that you shared. You've spent weeks chanting and learning the science of the holy names. We're so fortunate today to be graced by the words of the smiling saint. Based in chanting has a simple recipe. It begins with aligning our mind, heart, and body. Correct posture brings alertness, awareness, and great happiness. But don't follow the slouching sadhu who made his inner state fixed in sadness. Pronunciation and sincere listening requires great attention. These practices deepen our connection. In this way, for the holy name, we can feel great affection. As restless as the raging wind is the state of our mind. But do not be disheartened. There is a secret to becoming realigned. We must bring the mind back to the mantra. This is true wisdom. Like training a falcon, we must control it. This is mana samharanam. Now, onto the topic of most attraction, our heart, the seat for all our emotion. It holds our spiritual self, a being of great love, as deep as an ocean. Our spiritual self is never lost. The soul can never be destroyed. All that's needed is our attention, and with our dear Krishna, we can be rejoined. Though my heart is still divided, I wish to be attracted to Govinda. This simple prayer begins our journey and makes our spiritual vision clearer. What great wealth could we ever wish to attain now that Maharaj has given us the Kirtan checklist, the secrets to the holy name?
Wonderful. Thank you. I certainly don't deserve your kind words, but you summarized it nice. And I have a suggestion. I was thinking these points which I've made, they are there in summary form, you know, in the first chapter. It says, for instance, on page 34, in summary, to align the heart means, one, to become conscious of our need for Krishna. Second, revive our spiritual heart by reaching out to the divine in our chanting, and so on. And then this could be given to them. This is not much. It's just a summary. Could be given later to them if it is desired, or if it is good. But
Stefan has been so kind to take a picture and send it on our group, so we now have already this page 34, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was about the heart, and about the mind is also, and so on. You can whatever. Yes. Good. Then, my dear everyone, I need to do something now to get ready for the Berlin thing. I will be there at 3 o'clock and need to still arrange a few things. But I wish you all the best. And it's really such a pleasure to see a Kirtan training in person cohort and to see all of you. Don't forget, you learn to swim by swimming. You learn walking by walking. You learn Kirtan by doing Kirtan, no? This is something experience related. I thank you all very much. I don't really know how to get off, but Gokrishna is here. He will get me out. So Hare Krishna, all the best for all of you.